Imagine you have some kind of voice within you that tries to ask yourself, am I behaving morally or not? That voice sometimes is asleep.
Hi, I'm Naomi Brockwell for Reason TV, and I'm here at the Games for Change conference at the Tribeca Film Festival, here with Dan Ariely, who is a behavioural economist at Duke University and the author of the recent book, The Honest Truth About Dishonesty, How We Lie to Everyone, Especially Ourselves. So it was lovely to chat with you today.
Same here.
This,
by the way, might have been one of your lies for today, which we often do. We tell white lies to people.
It may or may not be lovely to chat with you today. Who knows? Who knows what the truth is? So tell me a little bit about this contraption that you've built here. This is called a truth box, and you've built it for the conference. Tell me how this works.
So this is basically give you a chance for confession. So what we ask people to go inside and to say, to tell about a lie that was meaningful in their life, something that they've learned from, thought about, and so on. And we've had some fantastic stories about people doing all kinds of things. And, you know, we have this belief that, yes, we're honest and it's other people. But having to face some of your own past and some of the lies that you have told that might have been very uncomfortable, and you can tell a story about this, but why was it interesting and so on, is actually a very interesting process for us as researchers, and I think also cleansing and useful for the people who are participating in it.
Everyone considers themselves to be an honest person, but there is that underlying conflict that people have between telling the truth and then wanting to cut corners and get ahead. So which side do you find usually wins out?
So here's the thing. There's lots of ways to lie. And the odd thing is that we lie a lot and we think of ourselves as good people. And here's one study. Imagine two people come to a room. They don't know each other. And you say, introduce yourself to the other person. Talk about yourself for 10 minutes. At the end of the 10 minutes, you put them in different rooms and you say, did you lie? And everybody said, me? Of course not. Then they say, luckily we taped everything you've said. Let's play it back to you sentence by sentence and tell us whether each sentence is absolutely the truth or not. And at the end of this exercise, people admit to lying 2 to 3 times in 10 minutes. And think about it. In social interactions, do you really want to tell people everything you think about them? Do you really want to portray yourself in the most objective way? So the reality is that we lie a lot and we recognize it. And much of it is for social lubrication. Much of it is white lies. But it sometimes also happens in the workplace.
Well, I mean, you did mention in your book that not everyone is like a Bernie Madoff. Not everyone is going to try and get you for all you're worth. But everyone tends to lie a little bit. And those lies accumulate and they actually can be quite destructive. So what are some ways that you suggest that we can mitigate these lies? We can actually decrease the amount of cheating and lying in our own lives and in the lives of others?
So first of all, it turns out that having strict rules really help. Imagine the tax code being very gray or very clear. Think about something like Alcoholic Anonymous. They have a rule that says no drinking whatsoever. What would happen if the rule was half a glass a day max? Right? The glasses would become very big. You would say, I'm not drinking today. I'll drink twice tomorrow. There'll be all kinds of negotiations. And not because we want to cheat other people, it's because we tell ourselves stories that are convenient for us in the short term. The other thing is having some moral reminders. So we do lots of experiments. We tempt people to steal money from us. We get them to do a little test, and then they grade themselves. And they get paid by how much they grade themselves, but we can find out if they graded themselves extra positively compared to what they did. But if we do experiments in which we ask people to first try to recall the Ten Commandments or swear on the Bible or all kinds of things like that, cheating goes down dramatically, sometimes is eliminated. So if you think about it, imagine you have some kind of voice within you that tries to ask yourself, am I behaving morally or not? That voice sometimes is asleep, allowing you to do all kinds of things. But if you just recite the Ten Commandments, thought about morality and so on, all of a sudden you behave better. One of the things we find is a pattern we call the what the hell effect. And the idea is that people kind of cheat a little bit, and at some point they switch and start cheating all the time. And people report on this in dieting. So let's say you have a strict diet and you start the morning with a muffin. You say, hey, today I'm not a dieter. I might as well enjoy it. And the logic is that we think of ourselves in binary terms. We're either good or bad. Now, if you're 92% good, you can still think of yourself as a good person. But if you're 78% good, is it really worthwhile moving to 82? Maybe not. You might as well go all the way and enjoy it. So we did some experiments with confession. It's a non-Catholic confession. And we found that confession really helps. So the moment you declare what you've done badly, you are able to start a new page. And you can think about the Truth and Reconciliation Act in South Africa as opening a new page. How do you go from apartheid to post-apartheid? There's no smooth transition. But if you stand there and you say, here's all the bad things we've done, and tomorrow we're trying to open a new page, this really helps. And I think we need to think about more mechanisms for that. And then the most important thing is eliminating conflicts of interest. If you like a particular soccer team, and the referee is calling a call against your team, you can't help but think of the referee as evil, vicious, stupid, blind, something like that, because you want to see things in a certain way. So what happens is that we have a motivated cognition. We're able to see, we have tremendous flexibility in how we can see the world. And if we have a conflict of interest, we will see the world in a very different way. Lobbying turns out to be incredibly valuable. Now, why? Because people are cheap. And what I mean is that you can buy somebody a sandwich and a drink, and all of a sudden they start seeing life from your perspective.
Do you find that there are certain types of people who are more honest than others? So in that respect, I'd probably say that, you know, you've got politicians up here more dishonest, and perhaps nuns and firemen down here. Or do you see lying as being universal?
So in general, we find it to be universal. We tried many countries. So we tried China and Israel, we tried Italy, we tried England, of course, we tried Canada. The Canadians always think they're better. They're not. We tried South Africa, we tried Colombia. We tried many countries. We don't find many differences. We also don't find difference with intelligence, with risk taking. The one thing we do find is that creative people cheat more. And here's the story. Imagine that it's all about rationalization. You want to look at yourself in the mirror and feel good about it. Mm-hmm. You also want to benefit from cheating. And you cheat a little bit so you can cheat and benefit from it, but still look on yourself in the mirror and feel good about yourself. It's all about telling a story. And if you're creative, you can tell better stories, which means you can cheat a little bit more and still feel good about yourself.